doing the unthinkable, putting one's life on the line for others. Hello, this is Doug Clark. Welcome to Probe. We explore on Probe this week parts of Isaiah of greatest interest to Christians in particular. The final two servant songs of Isaiah 50 and 52-53. What would these words have meant to their original audience, to New Testament believers, to us today? To help us with these questions, I have again asked Drs. Alden Thompson and Stravko Stefanovic, who teach Old Testament at Walla Walla College, to be my guests. Welcome to both of you to Probe.
Thank you.
As we turn our attention now to the second two of the servant songs, we looked last week at the first two, one in 42 and one in 49. We look now to chapter 50, but before we do that, let's just think about some of the imagery that surrounds these songs. Stravko, we ended last week by thinking, yes, about spear points and swords and so on, but also about these family metaphors, this sense of close, personal, intimate relationships. Mm-hmm. I think I'd like to come back to that.
So the tenderness of a parent, of a mother, described in chapter 49 and verses 14, 15, and 16. But Zion said, "The Lord has forsaken me. The Lord has forgotten me. Can a mother forget the baby at her breast and have no compassion on the child she has born? Though she may forget, I will not forget you. See, I have engraved you on the palms of my hands. Your walls are ever before me."
That type of tenderness is not only in Isaiah. I mean, you have it in books of prophets like Hosea in particular, where God speaks kind of as mother and father, mm-hmm. one who trains a child, one who feeds and nurses a child. And you have other metaphors in Isaiah of God giving birth, these birth pangs for mm-hmm. someone special. And then you have this word for mercy that is tied to womb, mm-hmm. to uterus. So this tender side is truly there. Thank you for helping us think about that. We turn our attention then to the remaining two servant songs, given this title by scholars who've worked on these things for long periods of time. And that is in chapter 50, the third one, chapter 50, verses 4 through 9. What kinds of things do we have here? Let's not take a long time. We want to get to chapters 52, 53. But what do we have here about the servant? Something about danger?
Yes, but tenacity is one word that comes to mind. I've set my face like a flint, and I know that I shall not be put to shame.
We have that in the first one, too, that he will not rest until justice is established in the earth. Mm-hmm. So that whole idea of sticking with it, sticking with the mission of the servant, certainly comes through again.
And one reason for that is that in this chapter, maybe more than anywhere else, it talks about God being so closely involved in the life of the servant, in all that he does, wakes him up in the morning and so on. So he's constantly on his right-hand side.
I've had students tell me that this is how they get up in the morning, mm-hmm. that they wait for God. They read this text, and then they wait for God to wake them up. And I'm not sure how well it works. Sometimes maybe, but sometimes not. I'm not mm-hmm. sure. But in any case, but it's still such a close, mm-hmm. personal, relational kind of image, isn't it, of the God that you depend on, who is there, who is close by you, and so on. Mm-hmm. Well, let's then spend the rest of our time thinking about what at least Christians focus on. You know, we can talk about the servant songs, the four of them, but let's get to 52, 53. We can talk about the gentle images and so on, the tender images, but let's get to 53. Let's make sure we get there.
And it is not an easy chapter.
No, it is not.
I have the names here of two scholars. Moving at least one, he changed his mind three times
in publications.
Over 30 years, yes. And another scholar who was asked to write a commentary on Isaiah, and he said, "Until I solve the puzzle on Isaiah 53, I cannot do it." But again, there is a danger on putting too much emphasis on the identification.
Right. Right. Let's think about the role here. And I suspect that the primary role that we see here, we'll see a number of things, but the primary role here is to make a sacrifice, somehow to step in and do something for someone else's guilt. That seems to be a role here.
But it's done in a surprising way. 52:10 is where I actually like to start that unit, where it says that the Lord will lay bare his holy arm and all the nations will see his power. Now you expect at least an atomic explosion, if not something of far greater power. But then it's a tender shoot out of a dry ground, dying because nobody's watering it, and people don't recognize greatness in that kind of weakness. So it is one of the biggest surprises in the Old Testament.
And that leads into the surprises of the verses, at least, the way people normally divide them up. That's such a nice introduction to this song. And most people would say that it's not... You started in 52:10. Mm-hmm. Many people would see several verse units, beginning with 52:13 through 15, then 53:1-3, and then 4-6, and then 7-9, and then 10-12. Mm-hmm. These groupings. And there probably should be some attention as we read these psalms, not just to read them as flat literature, as flat narrative, mm-hmm. but to pay attention even to the forcefulness of this. And that we probably are to think about movement towards something that leads to the kind of joy we can have because of this servant.
There's one feature that I think we ought to mention here. Again, because tendency of Christians, especially more conservative Christians, who have been so interested in seeing Christ's substitutionary death of this chapter, that they may overlook another feature. Isaiah 53 is not really quoted very often in the New Testament. And the one place that it is clearly quoted in Matthew 8:17 applies these phrases not to Jesus' substitutionary death, but to his healing miracles. And I'm thinking here of chapter 53, verse 4. Surely he has borne our infirmities and carried our diseases. That's applied to Jesus' physical healing of miracles. I mean, miracles of physical healing. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing to see that happening. Mm-hmm. So the link here between personal salvation and physical restoration, I think, is probably a lot closer.
We don't have all that many direct quotes, do we, of Isaiah 53 in the New Testament? Allusions, no. Maybe?
Right. It's mentioned in Acts when Philip witnesses yes. to the Ethiopian and so on. Yes.
But there are very few references, and one wonders if perhaps the deepening meaning of this came clear after, who knows how many years afterwards. Mm-hmm.
And if it's true, as we think about the New Testament and the disciples and so on, and the sense of expectations of a Messiah, it was the spear points and the lances and the swords, rather than this role. So I wonder if even the New Testament writers, as you're saying, Alden, didn't tumble so quickly to this as we do, as we're looking back now from a long history of interpretation. I wonder if that's not the case.
It might be also good to remember at this point that when we compare this passage to Isaiah 1, where the whole nation is portrayed like a body that is wounded, full of sores, and so on, there are several lexical links, the common vocabulary. And if we put the two together in the context of the book, then you have a nation that is so sick in sin. And then you have the servant who takes all of that upon himself. Yes. And then it says, by his wounds we are healed. In verse 5.
Yeah.
And that's something wonderful. Yeah, so there is hope. There is a way out for the whole
Very nation. Nice connection. There's also language in this passage that connects with other literature outside of Isaiah. The sheep, the idea of sheep. We are God's sheep, the sheep of his pasture. We are his lambs. The notion of sheep being brought to slaughter we see in other psalms, typically exilic psalms, typically psalms from people who have experienced the exile and who are wondering, how are we ever going to get out of this? Mm-hmm. And maybe that's why a number of people would say that pretty much everything in Isaiah 53, at least in some way or another, one could apply to the local situation. Mm-hmm. But then, as one thinks about it from a New Testament perspective, how much of an expanded, expansive, explosive view we have when we look at it through the lenses of the New Testament.
You know, there's another way. I think of Professor Peake, Old Testament scholar from Britain many years ago, used Isaiah 53 as kind of the capstone of four kinds of innocent suffering in the Old Testament. You start out, he would say in the Psalms, it's primarily, we just want to get rid of suffering. It's a burden, Lord, deliver me. And then you go to Job, who is trying to understand his suffering. Then you go to Jeremiah, who suffers in connection with a call. But in Isaiah 53, one is actually called to suffer. One's mission is there to suffer, which is certainly the most amazing.
And even to suffer on behalf of someone else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I have mentioned, I think I mentioned last time, that at the end of the Book of Lamentations, you have basically the same vocabulary and language. Mm. In response to a popular proverb from the destruction by the Babylonians, that our fathers have eaten sour grapes and our teeth are set on edge. Jeremiah, Ezekiel both deal with that, and God through them says, no, we're not going to go there anymore. But there is this sense of bearing someone else's iniquity. And Lamentations mm-hmm. chapter 5 has the very same language here. Mm-hmm. So that if one is thinking about Israel as servant, somehow tied to this, the language is there, the comparison is there, and it's dealing with a similar kind of situation.
I cannot help also but think of Moses. Mm. When we look at his story, how many times he told God, you told me to carry these people like a parent would carry. And if we are to accept what scholars suggest in regard to Numbers 12, and instead of saying that Moses was the meekest person, in a sense he was a very miserable person on the face of the earth, because we see rebellion after rebellion, even within his family and so on. So definitely he would qualify as a suffering servant.
Mm. I think the phrase there, I think it's probably better translated, he was the most beat up of all people on earth.
Yes,
that's really what the word means.
Yeah.
Now the fruits here of the suffering. Mm-hmm. Give the servant joy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about Mother Teresa, who reminds us that we should be doing, we should do good. Mm-hmm. And even if people don't like it, mm-hmm. don't appreciate it, let's keep doing good. Mm-hmm. We should treat people with fairness. Even though people don't like that, let's keep treating people with fairness. Mm-hmm. But here in Isaiah, it even does go further than that. We do have some fruits. We have a result. We have an mm-hmm. outcome. What is mm-hmm. that?
He will see his offspring and prolong his days, and the will of the Lord will prosper in his hand. After the suffering of his soul, he will see the light of life and be satisfied. By his knowledge, my righteous servant will justify many.
Yeah. One must again wonder at the beauty and significance of the servant songs found in Isaiah, and how they convey so profoundly the role of the one who serves others, even to carrying their guilt and punishment. Thank you again for your help. Next week on Probe, we talk further about the Book of Isaiah, this time the amazingly well-crafted lessons of chapters 55 and 56. My thanks to Steve Cochran, the producer of Probe, to all of you for listening in to Probe. I'm Doug Clark.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you may call 509-527-2194 or email probe@wwc.edu. Join us again next week at the same time for Probe.